Shabbatov. The shiur this week, which was Shabbos Parshas Ekev, dealt with the Mishnah on Yud Amud Beis and the Gemara continuing from there, beginning with discussions about the ksuva of a besula and then other ksuvos, so the ksuvos for other women, I should say, and then continuing with interesting notes on language, I suppose I would say, lessons of language. So the Mishnah begins, it's on the second of the wide line. So, ksuvas amasayim, v'almana mana, the ksuva of a besula is 200 zuz, and for an almana, which literally means a widow, it is a mana, 100 zuz. It isn't just for a widow, as becomes clear in the rest of the Mishnah. It's basically any woman who is not a besula. We've already discussed the fact that Rabbeinu Tam says that the ksuva is using more expensive coins. The coins are called zuzei deoraisa, biblical coins, and that they are 8 times the value of regular coins. The Rama notes this. I brought it on the sheet from Evan Ezer Samach Vav Vav, and we also noted that today it's a Gemara in Bava Kama, Lamed Vav Amud Beis, that speaks to the ratio of biblical coins as opposed to rabbinic coins, as well as the Rambam in the commentary to the Mishnah in Bechoros, where he's talking about the value of Pruta, which I also brought on the sheet. For more on the value of Iksuba, also see the source sheet. I gave you a link to an article available on jlaw.com, which speaks to contemporary valuations of the value of Iksuba. I should also note, and we noted in the shiur today, that the whole concept of zuzei deoraisa, of biblical coins, is actually somewhat problematic. Current archaeology believes that they were not minting coins at the time that the Torah was given. The earliest minted coins that have been found so far are late 7th century before the Common Era in the area of modern Greece and Turkey, which would seem to be a problem. I mean, the Torah uses the term kesef. So, you know, if you tell me kesef is a coin, where are these coins? However, you should know there are 3 approaches to what the term kesef means in the Torah. One view is that it's indeed a minted coin. Another view is that it's a monetary value. And then a third view, that it's simply a quantity of silver. And I gave you references on the sheet in footnote 3 to an article on this in Shiurim that I've given on it. I'm just noting right now, since we talk about the ksuva potentially being measured in zuzei deoraisa, in biblical coins, not so simple and straightforward. Okay. Also worth noting, in an earlier discussion about this and about the coins that are used, and the fact that if it's zuzei deoraisa, it's a higher level coin. So I quoted from Rav Schachter that the coins being 8 times more valuable means that the ksuba of a besula would be 16 times the ksuba of an almana, because her coins are 8 times the value of the coins used for the almana, and her ksuba amount is double, so therefore you'd end up being 16 times. However, we noted today that if you actually look at the language of the Rama, I guess we will look at this, from the source sheet in Samach Vav Vav. First, we saw the Machaber, who brings you how to evaluate the value of a ksuba in dirham, particularly useful if you're living in the Ottoman Empire in the 16th century. And then we brought the Rama, who said that, according to one view, the Yesh Poskim, which is Rabbeinu Tam, he says, Masayim shal besula umana shal amana misharim bezuzei deoraisa. He says the 200 zuz of the besula, the mana of the amana, are gauged using zuzei deoraisa. Meaning, the zuzei deoraisa are not only for the besula's ksuba, but they are also for the amana's ksuba. So, therefore the ratio remains 2 to 1. She's also having these higher level coins. So in that case, it's not true that the ksuva of the besula will be 16 times the ksuva of an almana. Okay, and that's all commenting on the beginning of our Mishnah. Then the Mishnah continues to say, besula almana grusha v'chalutza min ha'erusin. A woman who is a besula, but is a widow, or was divorced, or underwent chalitza. Her husband died without having children, and then she remarried was up for yibum and instead had chalitza. In all these cases, ksuva san masayim, the ksuva is still 200 zuz because she's still a basula. And Yeshlan Tanas Besulim, the husband, can claim that there were no Besulim in order to knock the Ksuba down in value, in order to claim Mekach Toz altogether, that the wedding was under false pretenses. So a Besula is a Besula is a Besula, no matter what marital situations she has been in. Fundamentally, if she's still a Besula, the Ksuba is going to be 200 Zuz. So you might ask, why isn't that obvious? Right? The Ksuba of a Besula is 200 Zuz. She's a Besula, so it should be 200 Zuz. So Shita Mekubetzes explains, based on language that you find in the Rishalmi, in Ksuba's Perek Aleph, I might have thought that in these cases, it should only be 100 Zuz in order to prevent an obstacle to the marriage. Meaning, we're going to see, God willing, later on in the Masechta, that there's a little bit of a balancing act when it comes to determining what the value of a ksuba should be. You want it to be high enough that it will be a deterrent for divorce, without it being so high that the man will just say, well, I don't need to marry this woman. There's a risk that if you make it so expensive for him to marry a Besula, he'll simply say, so I won't marry a Besula. The situation back then, and some might argue it hasn't changed, but the situation certainly back then was that the male was in a more powerful position when it came to marriage, and you don't want to give him a disincentive. So therefore, in our discussion, the Shita Mekubetzes says, maybe it's possible that if she either, look at our first case, was an almana, she had been married but the husband died. And then, more likely, in the event that there actually was a divorce after Kiddushin, and even more likely, where the husband died and then the Yavam, who was supposed to marry her and do Yibum, did Chalitza instead, there's a very serious possibility someone looks at this situation and says, I'm not interested in marrying her. So I would have thought, let's lower the bar. And the Mishnah's Chiddush, the novelty here, is that we do not say that, and instead it's still 200 Zuz. Okay, that concludes the Mishnah. The Gemara now goes into some lessons of language, we will call them. My Almana, what does the word Almana mean? Now, the Ritva says, I would have thought the word Almana comes from the word Elaim, to be silent, because she's silent in her grief. However, because of the Nun He ending, he says, we look for additional possibilities. And what we're going to say here, I don't think should be, taken as language, meaning as a sophisticated etymology. But Amar Rav Chana Bagadata, Rav Chana of Baghdad said, Almana al shem mana. She's called an Almana because her ksuva is 100 Zuz. So the Gemara says, oh, but wait a minute. Almana min ha'erusin ma'ika lememer. What if she's still a Besula? She was an Almana from Kiddushin. She never got to Nisuin. Then ma'ika lememer. Then what would you say? Aidi da'a kari la Almana. Hanami kari la Almana. The answer is that since she's called an Almana where it's from Nisuin, so all widows are called Almana. That's the idea. The Maharsha makes the point on this, that a man is called an alman. What do you do with that? So he says, it's just because the woman is an almana. So she's almana, so therefore he is called alman. The Chasam Sofer has another approach on here. He has a fascinating idea, Ayin Sham. But that's similar to the Maharsha regarding Alman, Almana, and that's what our Gemara is telling us, is that Almana comes from the Ksuba being Almana. So the Gemara has a problem with this, right? Because the Ksuba of an Almana is not biblical. Ksuba an Almana is rabbinic according to everybody. Everybody agrees with that. Meaning, when we talked about whether Ksuba of a Besula might potentially be that the ksuba of a besula might actually be biblical because of the term mohar habesulos, no one suggested that there was a biblical ksuba for a non-besula. So therefore the Gemara asks, amana dechsiva ba'oraisa meyikala meymer. Why would the Torah call her an amana? She doesn't have a ksuba. She doesn't have a ksuba of amana, a ksuba of anything else. So he says, da asidin rabbanan demitakni lamana. Yeah, but it's for the future, because the rabbis are going to come along and are going to establish a mana as her ksuva. Tosfos notes, we don't say, oh, well, if almana means mana, that's proof that the ksuva of an almana is actually biblical. We don't do that. And his reason for that, he says, is the word mana doesn't appear in Chumash, not as a coin. They may appear as a portion, but it doesn't appear as a coin. So therefore, you can't argue that almana, mana, or ksuva v'mana is biblical. Okay, so instead, when the Torah uses the term almana, it's because in the future we're going to have a ksuva of emana. Umi kasav krala asid. Did Hashem do that? Did He write things in the Torah for the future? In yes, tichsev v'shem anahar shlishi chidakel hu haolech kidmas ashur. When the Torah, in the very beginning, describes Gan Eden and describes the four rivers, the third river is chidakel, the Tigris, and it goes east towards Ashur. So, v'tana Rabbi Yosef, Ashur zo Salika. And Rabbi Yosef taught, Ashur is a reference to a city called Salika. Umi havoi. But could that city possibly have been there? Ella de Asida. It would be there in the future. Hachanami de Asida. So to hear, it's about the future. Now, Rashi says what we're saying is that the city couldn't have been around in the time of Gan Eden. However, Tosfos says, well, that doesn't matter as long as it's around by the time Moshe gives the Torah. That's good enough. And so what we're saying is it wasn't around. The city of Ashur was not known at the time of Matan Torah, and therefore the Torah should not have used that that term. It was noted in the Shir that archaeologists may well have the city of Ashur existing at the time that the Torah was given. Nonetheless, Rabbeinu Tam and the Gemara may not have been familiar with that. You could always give the easy answer, and Tosas notes this, which is to say that when the Torah refers to Ashur, it means the place where the city would one day be built. And it's later even than Matan Torah. That's really what we're saying here. You can do that with the Plishtim as well, because there's a lot of debate about when exactly the Philistines inhabited the area where the Torah says there are Plishtim in the time of Avraham. But the conclusion of the Gemara is Hashem writes things that are going to be relevant at some point in the future, and the generation that receives the Torah simply has to say, okay, this is something that we don't know anything about yet, but we will one day have some knowledge of it, and that's what was being hinted at in the word almana. Okay. Then, Rav Chana of Baghdad is not done. V'amar Rav Chana Bagadatar, Rav Chana of Baghdad. Oh, by the way, I mentioned in the Shir, look at the Ramban in Bereishis Perek Yedalet Pasuk Zayin, if you want more about this, on the Sidei HaAmaleki, the Amalekite field in the time of Avraham. And of course, Amalek, being the grandson of Esav, doesn't exist, and there is no Amalekite field in the war between the four kings and the five kings in the time of Avraham. So Ramban there points to Midrashim like this about things being written for the future. Okay. So Rav Chana of Baghdad now plays with the word matar, saying that the word matar has many mem traits, as he's about to spell out. And what he's really doing is he is praising rain by listing these five traits. Think of it as like a Dayenu thing. He says, you want to know how great matar, how great rain is? Mashke. First of all, it irrigates. Second, it is marve. It quenches. Umizabel. It helps fertilize things. Umadain. And it also rejuvenates. And umamshich, it also draws forth the fruit. Amar Rava bar Rabbi Yishmael v'itemer Rabbi Yemar bar Shlamya, one of these two Amoraim said, Maikra, what is the pasuk for this? And he references a pasuk at Tehillim Samach Hei Yud Aleph, Tehillim chapter 65, in which it's talking about rain. Telameha Ravei, Hashem, you should quench its furrows. Nachez gidudeha, settle her gidudim, settle the furrows. So rave, quench, is a reference to mashke, irrigating, and marve, quenching. And then it continues, birvivim, with showers, timogigena. You will literally soften it, but as Rashi explains it, timogigena means to fertilize it. And then, Simcha Tivarech, you will bless the produce. That's a reference to rejuvenating and drawing forth the fruit. In terms of fertilizing being softening, rain doesn't inherently fertilize, obviously, but it helps perhaps with the breakdown of the compost or the distribution of the compost in the earth, and that would fit very well with Timogigena. I gave you Rashi's breakdown of the different parts of the pasuk. The Shita Mekubetzes has a different breakdown of the parts of the pasuk, but the point is simply Rav Chana of Baghdad is praising the value of precipitation with these different elements which come from or relate to the word matar. And Rabbi Elazar jumps in and does the same thing with the Mizbeach. Amar Rabbi Elazar, Mizbeach, Meziach, it removes, Umezin, it also nourishes, Mechabev, causes affection, Mechaper, it atones. So the Gemara asks, presumably Meziach, remove, means to remove bad things. Mechaper, atoning, also removes bad things. So Hainu Mechaper, Hainu Meziach, aren't they referring to the same thing? Or what are they referring to? Meziach refers to Gezeros, removing decrees, bad decrees against us. Umechaper Avonos, atoning, means actually eliminating the sin. The Marsha says that this list of mems here, these four mems, refer to different types of karbanos, different types of offerings. So that Meziach is removing away the bad decrees, that's the Ketores, the incense, which in the Torah stops Hashem's plague, stops the Magepha. Mezin nourishes. So what is the nourishing idea? So the Marsha says it refers to the Karban Tamid, the daily Karban, as well as the Karban Ola in general, which are called Lechem, they're called food, because they feed us. And that fits with Rashi, who says that the nourishing here is a reference to feeding us as a result of the karbanos. And then you have Mechabev, causing affection. That's the Shlamim, the celebration karban of gratitude, which brings shalom and love between Hashem and us. And finally, Mechaper, atoning. That's clearly sin-related karbanos, chatas, and asham. In terms of the idea of the Mizbeach nourishing, so Rashi said it's that the world is fed in the merit of the karbanos. I would also note this comment in the Kuzari, in Mamar Sheni, Si'if Chaf Vav, in which he suggests that food connects the body and the soul, keeps them connected to each other, and the karbanos feed the connection between Hashem and the universe. This is a very interesting concept that I don't really understand, but I'm mentioning it nonetheless. Okay. Then we move into one more from Rav Chana of Baghdad, and we only started on it this time, and we'll have to continue it, Amir Tzashem, the next time, and that is regarding dates. So Rav Chana of Baghdad says, V'am Rav Chana Bagarata, Tamri, dates, Mashchanan, Misab'an, Mishalshalan, Me'ashran, V'lo Mifankan. Mishachnan or Mashchanan, they heat up the body, as Rashi says. Misab'an, they satiate. Mishalshalan, they are laxatives. Ma'ashran, they strengthen the body. And lo mafankan, they don't make the person picky about what he's going to eat. So there's more to say about this, and the Gemara itself is going to have more to say about dates. So God willing, we'll pick up with that. There is no shir for the next two Shabbases. Amir Tzashem, I will be away. But be back, God willing. Parshas Ki Teitzeh.